The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
One of the rites of passage for kids and their parents is playing sports. Whether it's kicking a soccer ball or playing t-ball in the park, or maybe taking part in organized sports in the grade schools and high schools, the value of children being involved with athletics is enormous. But with the benefits come some risks, especially the possibility of a concussion. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to focus on the dangers of head injuries among our youth. Joining us on today's program is Ryan Wilkinson. He's clinical assistant professor and director of clinical education for UWM's athletic training education program, all of that in the College of Health Science. Welcome, Ryan. It's good to have you with us on today's program.
Thank you for having me.
So am I overstating it when I say that you have to be cautious as a parent because concussions are a reality?
Absolutely. It's certainly inherent in activity and athletics in general, but it's more prevalent in the contact sports such as football, even soccer. Girls soccer has sort of risen to a pretty high level of concussion incidents. And even things like hockey, lacrosse, other contact sports are very common for athletes to suffer head injuries and more significant injuries. But we're seeing it in other sports as well, where an athlete may just simply fall wrong and their head hits the court, where it might not be a contact sport, but they certainly have a pretty high risk for some of those significant injuries.
So has this always been with us and we're just paying more attention to it now? Because, you know, I remember playing as a kid and getting knocked in the head a couple of times. That may explain a lot now later, but I don't remember back when I was growing up the focus on a concussion.
Right. It's certainly hitting a pretty high level, hot button issue across the country and even internationally. I think a lot of that stems from the NFL and some of the contact that the NFL players are going through now at the high level of speed that they play. But also now we're seeing some of the long-term effects that athletes are dealing with after football. And they're retired and dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's disease and some of the long-term consequences that may be a result of a concussion, multiple concussions that they've sustained in their career. So the injuries have always been there. This particular one has always been around, but we're learning a lot more about the significance of it as it happens, but even now more later on in life, its impact on their health and well-being.
Well, you're involved in the athletic training education program. I suspect that you spend a lot of time talking to students who are going to end up working in this field about this particular risk.
Absolutely. Our students go through a number of courses designed to properly evaluate and manage injuries, including concussions. And part of that includes a mandatory clinical experience, and most of the time that occurs in various high school or college or professional settings. But we do require a football experience, a contact sport experience, to try and get them accustomed to how they deal with those injuries on the sideline and on the field. So we definitely put a high priority on making sure our students are prepared to enter that field, and particularly with the high level of profile that concussions have right now. That's certainly a high priority of ours.
What are the warning signals? You know, I can imagine parents will be taking, listening to this program, will be taking their kids to practice at some sport this weekend. Lord knows there's camps for everything right now. What sort of things should a parent, or for that matter, a coach be looking for?
Well, I think the initial concern is always the big hits. And you see in football and even on TV, the big hits are always what gains the crowd's attention, and everybody seems to cheer. But what we're finding is that a lot of the minor, smaller level contact hits might be just as traumatic, particularly if they're repetitive. If you think of an offensive lineman, even in the Pop Warner stage, how many times they make contact with their opponent, and it may just be those small repetitive hits that occur over and over again. Maybe even more so than the one big hit that someone sustains. But certainly if that hit occurs, or if that particular athlete displays signs of a concussion, they might include things like headaches or dizziness, confusion, irritability, nausea. And it's sort of a matter of trying to put all the pieces together and make a decision as to whether or not someone really does suspect that a concussion has occurred.
Can you count on the athlete to report those symptoms or to come clean and say, hey, you know, I don't think something's right here? Or does that macho tough guy or tough girl attitude prevent them from being completely honest?
Right. You'd hope so, but I think the reality is people want to play at all costs. And so it's a matter of being able to assess some of those things without always relying on the athlete's honest display of their own symptoms. It might just be an athletic trainer being able to recognize that I know this athlete and I know from their personality that they're not themselves right now. They're dealing with some confusion and they're trying to hide it, but it's often difficult to do. So it's a matter of putting all those pieces together and trying to get a sense of whether or not something significant has occurred.
You talked about football being one of those high-impact sports where we perhaps have put the majority of our emphasis in terms of noticing that there's something amiss here when you see the results of years of being on the battlefield for some of these NFL stars. One of the things that I always wondered about is, you know, in this high-tech age, isn't there a way to create or to produce better equipment, better helmets, better shields to minimize this? It seems amazing that you know, we would still be seeing concussions to the degree we do, given the fact that we can send people to the moon in amazingly tough suits and helmets and the like.
You'd think that, and unfortunately, I don't know that we're there yet. I think the technology has improved, but we're finding that the traditional football helmet, for example, is really designed more to prevent skull fractures and less about the traumatic injuries that a brain might withstand within the skull. And so it's really a matter of trying to do whatever you can to teach proper tackling form and not hitting with their head, not leaning with their head. But it's also trying to rely on equipment. I think we might be in trouble because the equipment just doesn't have the ability to maintain that level of prevention force right now. They've actually found that the old leather helmets have been no better or no worse in terms of preventing concussions than some of the higher tech equipment that we see right now.
Really? Even with the helmets that have the inflatable side pockets and pads?
Sure. And I think it's mostly because of the speed at which the athlete is moving and then they come to an abrupt stop. It's not the contact necessarily from the ground or the player to the athlete. It's the fact that the brain is allowed to move within the skull, and that creates sort of that sloshing effect, and that creates sort of that bruise to the brain that we're always concerned about. So it's a matter of really trying to prevent them in certainly equipment, but also in other ways.
So explain, if you would, what is happening to the brain. You mentioned the sloshing around factor. Is it the brain physically moving? I mean, you can actually being displaced from its normal position?
Right. In normal sort of everyday life, the brain sort of floats around within the skull. And so a concussion is really when a violent shaking has occurred. And that usually means that that instead of being relatively in that floating part of the skull, it basically hits a side of the skull or multiple sides. And that's sort of what creates sort of the traumatic injury where they then might have some of the more memory loss issues and dizziness and some of those symptoms outside of just physically the contact injury that may have occurred at the point of contact.
Is there one part of the brain that is more prone to injury and at greater risk than other parts?
I think not necessarily anatomically. I think we're seeing that youth are certainly more prone because of the developing stages that the body is going through. And I think we're also seeing that it's a little bit unclear because any sort of hit could happen at any sort of angle. And sometimes it's the rotational forces that may create just as much of a trauma or traumatic injury as a huge concussive blow. So we're still trying to figure out a lot of the mechanisms of how some of those things happen.
And in what we've been talking about football, there are a lot of sports where there is no headgear at all in required or, for that matter, perhaps even available. You know, I'm thinking of, tennis, for example. You can slip on the court, I suppose, and get as serious a concussion as you could playing one of the more severe contact sports, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's certainly more common in higher contact sports. I think football has, I think, two out of every three concussion injuries in sort of athletics or youth athletics, but it's certainly common in other sports. The contact sports that don't require equipment, things like soccer, you run the risk of a lot of headers over time, the same sort of repetitive effect that part of the sport plays. But also going up in the air and potentially colliding with other athletes certainly puts you at risk for those types of injuries.
A lot of people may not recall, but Wisconsin actually is one of the states that has taken some steps to try to deal with this in terms of I don't know if preventing is the word, but certainly dealing with a concussion when it occurs, and that is the Concussion Act. And I know, Ryan, you were very, very involved in that. Describe what that's all about.
Right. When I was president of the Wisconsin Athletic Trainers Association, we developed a task force back in 2011 that we really wanted to get a sense of what the other legislation was like in other states, and trying to determine if this was a good time to pursue that in the state of Wisconsin. And along that same time, other healthcare organizations, individuals, physicians, and then certainly legislators got involved. Representative Fields and Senator Darling right here in the Milwaukee area were very instrumental in getting language put together for a bill. And I think considering the political climate that we've seen in Madison recently, it's a sort of a testament to that the nature of a concussion injury and athlete safety that it was able to work its way through the legislative process fairly quickly and get signed.
So you got support from both sides of the aisle, Republican and
Absolutely.
Democrats.
Absolutely. And I think that it was necessary for this type of an issue. And I think people saw it, legislators saw it as a great way to support a very worthy issue and cause that needed some national and statewide attention. And so they were certainly willing to jump on board, co-sponsor it, and going through some of the testimony hearings and so on as it worked its way through committees and so on. There was a lot of support for it, and it was just a matter of making sure that the bill ended up with some of the language that I think all of us felt comfortable with.
So what are some of the most beneficial parts of that bill from the standpoint of a young kid who's playing football or maybe out on the soccer field? How will things be different going forward as a result of this act approved by the legislature?
Right. The bill basically requires anybody under 19, so basically high school age and younger, any athletic activity before that season begins. The coach is required now to send an information sheet back to parents regarding concussions and head injuries, and that has to be returned and signed prior to participation. A lot of it really does focus on education and awareness, making sure that coaches are aware of what a concussion looks like, parents as well. The other part of it, though, is that if really anyone, a coach, an official, or a healthcare provider, determines that someone's displaying signs consistent with a concussion, they are required now by law to remove that athlete from that activity immediately, and they cannot return until a healthcare provider has provided written clearance. So it does provide the education piece on the front end, but then also as a concussion were to happen, it does require a certain few steps to occur before that individual is allowed to return.
Now, you mentioned NFL and some of the horror stories of some of the older stars being told, get back in the game, you know, just shake it off. It's just a dinger. What about as a result of this new law in Wisconsin, if a coach sees there's been a violent collision, does he have to wait to see some sort of behavior manifest itself, or is he or she required to pull the student athlete off the field or off the court to take a look at them to see what's going on here because of the, you know, severe impact of a collision?
Right. I think the important thing is putting the two pieces together. So certainly you want to be on the lookout for those violent collisions, and maybe either if it's a high contact sport, something that's going to require potential medical attention. But you do also want to put that together with something that the athlete may be displaying, either in signs or symptoms that they may have. And some of that may just be they're a little bit slow to get up, they're a little bit wobbly on their feet, they might return to the wrong huddle. You know, you sometimes deal with some of those issues with football, for example. But just simply a contact blow or collision, those happen all the time. And so I think it's a matter of combining that. That should sort of alert you that something may have happened, and then therefore keep an eye on some of the symptoms and so on.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this afternoon. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio, we've got Ryan Wilkinson, who's a clinical assistant professor at UWM, also head of the Athletic Training Education Program. And today's topic, concussions and the state of health of a lot of our young kids who are playing sports today, and also the impact of new legislation here in Wisconsin and what that might mean for protecting the best interest of these young athletes out on the court or on the field. Ryan, as I think about the experiences of being a parent and seeing my kids participate in soccer and football. My daughter was a diver, and I got to tell you, there were few close calls with that diving board in my mm-hmm. daughter's head where I think, good Lord, that was close. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I can imagine a lot of parents also nodding their heads saying, I remember my kid being in a situation where you say, yikes, that looked close. What advice would you give to a parent when they're on the sidelines, in the stands, watching their child compete? Is there anything that we can do as parents when the play is unfolding in front of us?
Sure. I think it's just a matter of certainly keeping an eye on the action as it's happening. I think a huge resource are athletic trainers that might be on the sidelines for these various activities. Unfortunately, I think only about 40% of high schools in the country have access to an athletic trainer. So we're sort of dealing with what happens when an athletic trainer or a healthcare provider is not immediately on the scene. Then it's a matter of really trying to educate the coaching staff, educate the officials and other administrators to really keep an eye on this and know, hey, we really need to remove someone from this game. But from a parent standpoint, I think it's observing certainly their son or daughter and making sure that if something does happen, that they try and get a sense of whether or not they've dealt with any sort of dizziness or that headache or other symptoms. And if there's any doubt, the recommendation is to sit them out until they've been cleared by a healthcare provider.
I suppose a lot of kids wouldn't want to see this, but if a parent sees there's something not right after a play on the field or the court, would you recommend them going down if the coach still has the kid in the game and say, you know, I think we better take another look at my son or daughter?
Sure, absolutely. I think certainly no one has a better sense of that particular athlete's demeanor and personality and certainly their well-being. So if there's any question or doubt, absolutely, it's certainly their right to get involved. I think we're also seeing the flip side where parents are maybe a little bit more aggressive and may want someone, their son or daughter, to continue playing when, in fact, a healthcare provider, for example, may say, you know what, this looks like it might be a concussion. We're going to remove them and do some further testing. So you sort of play both sides of it. But certainly as a parent, having an athletic trainer on the sideline is their first defense. And so the first step may be even saying if an athletic trainer is not available at their school, having that conversation with the school board, the district, and the administration at that school to see if that's something that they can pursue.
You know, you bring up a really good point because you know where my orientation is coming from my question, which is to err on the side of caution. But you're right, Ryan. I mean, I've been at games and matches and meets with my kids in prior years where you do have that one parent or two who you would think they're the ones competing on the field, you know, really, really, really being aggressive and pushing to get their son or daughter to get more playing time or get another shot even after a blow. That's got to be pretty distressing from your standpoint in terms of helping to train that next generation of athletic trainers.
Right, and it's a matter of really teaching our students that, you know, you may have to deal with parents in the high school setting. You will have to deal with parents, but dealing with coaches, dealing with officials, and making sure that as a healthcare provider, you really make sure that you play that role in the health and well-being of that athlete. And certainly that's our job when we're sort of on duty there. But you're right, sometimes parents or even coaches can really sacrifice that short-term well-being for maybe a potential play or season or game, and so you run the risk of sacrificing someone's health, and you certainly don't want to do that.
I always viewed that parent as the one jerk on the sidelines who just, you know, can't keep their mouth shut and let the coaches run the game and listen to people like the athletic trainers.
Right. It's just a matter of making sure that if an athletic trainer's there or a healthcare provider, they need to make sure that they're the ones making those decisions and not really referring to a coach or making a recommendation to a coach. The coach may have other motives and certainly other interests. But if the healthcare provider or athletic trainer is not there, that's really where this legislation steps in, because now it does require education of the parents, the coaches, and then certainly if a concussion looks like it has occurred, it does require that individual be removed.
You know, it's kind of startling when you said that only 40% of the school programs around the country have athletic trainers. Is that statistic any different here in Wisconsin?
It's hard to say. It might be only in that the inner city schools tend to be sort of the last schools that are able to potentially fund or provide funding for an athletic trainer. But oftentimes if an athletic trainer is not available or they're not provided by that particular school, then you really have to ask, you know, who's taking care of their athletes in terms of the health and well-being.
That's a good check for a parent before their kids even get into a program, right? What are you
absolutely
walking into?
And making sure that there's the support structure in place to really take care of their athlete's safety. But it's also a matter of when the suburban areas have pretty well-covered schools, that's great. They're often employed by a clinic and then outreaching to an area high school. But that's just not the case in some of the inner-city areas, because often it comes down to a lack of funding.
Wow. Well, as you think about training the student today to be in that role of an advocate, it sounds like you in addition to teaching anatomy, you also have to teach them some psychology to be able to speak up and represent the student's interest.
Right, and you also have to realize, you know, when things might get out of hand and when you're dealing with a coach that might respond negatively to the fact that a star athlete of theirs isn't able to continue. So you really do have to have a background in some of that counseling or psychology where they're able to really get a sense of how do I want to approach this particular individual. And it's also a matter of the athletic trainer getting to know the coaches in the off season, getting to know the athletes in the off season, so that when that emergency situation or really urgent situation occurs, you have a good understanding and a relationship with that individual where you know sort of where you what role you play, and they're willing to hopefully you know, trust you for your recommendations.
Talk about coaches in general here in the state. Are they pretty sensitive to the needs of the student and the requirements of this law?
I would think so. I hope so. I think the WIAA, for example, has been very involved and supportive of this type of legislation. And so hopefully, you know, that message is being sent down through various sports and the coaching staffs that are involved. In the end, though, I think, you know, particularly with some of the quote-unquote old-school type of coach, you might deal with someone who isn't as concerned with some of the long-term health consequences. They want someone to play right now. They want that athlete to finish this game, finish this season. And as a coach, they may be willing to risk that. But the athlete, particularly if they're in the high school level or younger, really doesn't have the ability in that sense to kind of represent themselves. So hopefully the athletic trainer, the healthcare provider, or certainly the parent can be involved in that role.
Have you come across those kind of coaches personally?
Over the years, a little bit. I used to cover college football here up at Concordia University, and sometimes you deal with some particular individuals, whether it's a position coach or a head coach or even other sports that we may have worked with. And sometimes it's a matter of really getting a sense that, you know, what we need to make sure we address these things before they happen. And if they do, this is why we kind of deal with those things. We educate them on what our role is, and hopefully they understand that we're there to really make sure that the athletes represented well.
So we've got this law in place here in Wisconsin. Are there other things that we should be doing as a community to protect the well-being of our kids when it comes to concussions?
I think this is a great step, and it's certainly a needed step. 38 states now have concussion legislation like this. So, you know, we were in line with a lot of other states that are dealing with the same things. I think, though, it might just be a beginning for us, and hopefully we can continue to educate parents, athletes, coaches, the public, that, you know, this is a little bit more significant than dealing with ankle injuries or knee injuries. We're potentially dealing with, you know, long-term mental and cognitive deficits that these athletes may be dealing with. if these aren't managed properly right now. So just a matter of making sure that that education and that awareness is out there, and hopefully we get more and more of that as we go.
And what about equipment in the future? Is anything being done to create better helmets, to create a, you know, maybe even better surfaces for athletes to be performing on?
Right. You mentioned surfaces. Certainly the newer field turf, sport turf kind of area, artificial surfaces are much better than the artificial surfaces used to be.
Because they don't dry out. You have some of those football fields or soccer fields that if it's natural grass,
right,
it could be hard as a rock after a
Well, and,
summer,
and you're
right?
playing on it day in, day out for months at a time, and so the grass certainly isn't going to be doing its job to help provide maybe a safer competition surface. So the artificial surfaces do help considerably. The helmet technology and so on, who knows? We'll see what that can bring us. But I think it's more a matter of making sure we educate coaches to, even at the Pop Warner level, this is the appropriate way that we want you to tackle someone. This is the appropriate way that we want you to avoid a tackle and deal with some of those things. The NFL has been very public about their rules against helmet-to-helmet contact and some of the violent things that we've seen over the years.
So, and instituted some big-time fines.
Right, and I think they're hopefully seeing some deterrence in those areas, but I think you're going to continue to see that sort of escalate, unfortunately. It's just a matter of making sure that you prevent the ones that you can, and when they do occur, things like this legislation and other policies that the NFL or colleges and so on abide by, manage concussions appropriately if they do occur.
Ryan, it sounds with so many schools or systems around the country that still don't have athletic trainers, that there is real opportunity for students who might be interested in this field to get a career going through programs like yours.
Right, and I think what we're seeing is a lot of interest in athletic training, and it's just a matter of how a school district, for example, can be creative in providing the necessary funding and so on. A lot of times, again, the athletic trainer is not employed by the school or the school district. They're employed by a local clinic or sports medicine facility. And so then it's more a matter of developing an affiliation with that clinic, and then the clinic saying, okay, here's someone that we're going to dedicate to your school. Maybe it's every day, maybe it's every few days, but it's at least a start to getting, you know, the right kind of healthcare professional on the sidelines.
Well, and it sounds like there may be opportunities at even health clubs, right, for those baby boomers like us who are still trying to keep moving. We break down too.
Sure, and I think you're seeing as the population grows and as people want to maintain their activity levels, we're seeing people, you know, in older and older ages that want to stay active and are going to physically deal with injuries and so on. And so I think from an athletic training standpoint, we're certainly a valid person that might be able to provide health care that they need.
I was talking to somebody about my workouts and their workouts, and I said my theory is if you can keep on running, they can't catch you. So that's a good motivator and probably another reason why we'll need athletic trainers going forward. Ryan, thanks so much. Fascinating conversation. We wish you the best of luck in your work in terms of training that next generation of athletic trainers.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Ryan Wilkinson, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. He runs the Athletic Training Education Program at UWM's College of Health Sciences. Well, that's all for this weekend's program. Thanks so much for taking time to join us. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.